The following Dharma talk was given by Jodi Hojin Kimmel at the Zen Center of New York City, Fire Lotus Temple. Hojin Sensei is the abbot of the Zen Center and head priest at Zen Mountain Monastery.
Good afternoon, everyone. Yeah, we're doing pretty good. I love these Zenkais because we kind of have to put it together with whoever shows up. And it's great because some people know a lot, some people are fairly new. And so thank you for helping me develop my patience, which is what I wanted to talk about a little bit today, and its relationship to the Genjo Koan, the way of our everyday life. So I wanted to... patience, a very important virtue that we develop, and it's only through our impatience that we can develop our patience. So Dogen, in his fascicle, though he never explicitly, directly talks about kshanti or patience, the perfection of forbearance, it permeates this, the whole text in a way. And when he says, when one side is illuminated, the other side is dark, he invites us into this patience of not trying to resolve opposites, seeming opposites, so quickly, right? That we have to have the forbearance, the patience to hold, not going to this side or this side, till it undoes itself, untangles, right? Genjo Koan means to actualize the fundamental point, to stay within that tension without grasping for completion. And that's what we're always trying to do, is figure it out, complete it. It's so hard to stay and hold that tension, isn't it? There was somebody who told me not too long ago, somebody wrote a book, it's all figure outable. And I just had to chuckle. I was like, really? Maybe I should read that. Like, what are they saying? I haven't gotten to that point yet. Anyway, this is from Black Hawk, who's a Cherokee Indian tribe leader, who wrote about patience. Constant motion seems more important than waiting. But waiting is the time to prepare, to build up the spirit and be rested and ready. When anxiety grips us, it uses up energy. It wastes our time. Patience, or waiting, he speaks of it both ways, creates a staying power so that there is no need to retreat and no need to go backward. Much depends on whether our waiting is a pause before going on or an inertia that puts us in a trance. But when the mind, body, and spirit track together as a unit to move mountains, the waiting is only a prelude to action that makes up for any lost time. So it's this holding, this tolerance, this holding of the tension of the opposites, I think he's speaking, that is we're not in a trance. We're waiting. It's a pause before going on, right? So patience. To study the Buddha way is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. To forget the self is to be verified by all things. And this unfolding requires a patience of gradual intimacy with ourself, as we study ourself. We can't leap the self into selflessness, right? The forgetting comes as the self exhausts itself through practice, through moment after moment, sitting, bowing, washing our bowls, eating a meal, using the lavatory, in intimacy, in really doing what we're doing while we're doing it. So have to have faith, quiet faith, that our effort will bear fruit when we can't really see it. And that the world will verify us in its own time as we practice wonder verifying itself. And this is a story I wanted to share that I've told before, which I love, about patience. There was once an old practitioner of the way who specialized, that should be a red flag already, in the practice of patience. After many years of hard work, he felt he had reached his goal, the perfection of patience. To announce this fact to the world, he set a sign up outside his hermitage, which read, "A nature like ashes." And one day, a young traveler passing down the road was struck by this very unusual sign and stopped to ask its owner what it meant. He says, "It says, 'A nature like ashes.'" "I beg your pardon," said the traveler. "Would you mind repeating that?" And so this sage says, "A nature like ashes." "Excuse me," said the youth, "but for some reason I can't quite make out the words. Would you be so kind to read them to me?" "They say," said this great old practitioner who had mastered patience, "a nature like ashes." The conversation continued on this vein for some hours until quite late in the day, when the traveler said, "Would you be so kind, sir, as to read the sign for me?" The sage, mustering all the force of patience that he could, said, "It says, 'A nature like ashes,' if you must know." "Yes," said the traveler, "but what does it say, please?" Of course, he exploded. "Damn it. I've told you once. I've told you a million times. It says, 'A nature like ashes.' That is what it says." "I see," said the traveler, as he took a step into the air and displayed the resplendent body of Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva. "And there remains an ember or two in those ashes. Given another 20 years, perhaps they may cool off. Good man, you'll have to wait around a while yet and keep working. In time, we will meet again." Who hasn't felt that? Somebody, what? What is it? Again, again, right? Avalokiteshvara constantly appearing, providing so many opportunities to practice patience. We have someone that comes pretty regularly or irregularly, Mabel, that wants something to eat. And she's really a wonderful woman, but she's very particular. And Joanne's shaking her head. If we bring the wrong thing to her, she'll send us back up every time. So we bring, she wants coffee and bread and butter and sugar in her coffee. We know it now. Cheese, if we have it. And then if there's not enough milk, not enough milk, she goes, sends us back up. And we're like, "Oh my God." Comes back, takes a sip. Coffee's too strong, needs more milk. Back up again. We dump some out, heat it up again, add more milk, bring it down again. Still kind of dark. Needs a little, and we're like, "Oh my God." Like, but you know, we really like her a lot, you know, we just keep doing it. And finally, she says, "Can I just have a carton of milk?" So we bring down a carton of milk. That seems to do it after a while. So patience, constantly challenged by the most unexpected circumstances sometimes. It's the third paramita. There's giving That's the first dana, right? Giving. Very first virtue. Just give. Give your life. And then there's loving kindness, patience. So this word, Sanskrit word for patience, kshanti, I hope I'm pronouncing it right, paramita. Param means the other shore. And ita means to have reached. So to have reached the other shore. So as soon as we're impatient and we contact our patience, the other shore has arrived, right? And there's another meaning of paramita, which is the very best, the unsurpassable best. So kshanti could refer to the very best patience, the unsurpassable patience. So what could that be, the unsurpassable patience? So when the Bodhisattva ideal was developed, there were these six unsurpassable ways that came into being as methods for developing or training ourselves in our virtuous qualities, because we have them, but sometimes they're like the cloud that covers the moon. There's a bit of darkness over them. Instead of a giving quality, we might withhold, right? Instead of being patient or impatient. So giving, morality. We actually have an inherent morality. We know what's right and wrong. We do know this. Patience, effort, of a joyful effort, meditation, and wisdom, prajna, the wisdom of the emptiness of all the conditions. And it's interesting to note the first three, the giving, the morality, and patience, have to do mostly with our relationship with others, right? Our patience, our morality, our giving nature. It's not just about me. It's not just about you. And that's very much the Bodhisattva's way, that other people are involved in our practice. Whether we like it or not, we are interdependent. The Bodhisattva's way is to serve others, right? To actively engage with others so that we can cross over that shore together. And the Bodhisattva stays in until that happens. And this gives balance to what could be otherwise a very self-centered striving for our own realization. So we do it with others. So the Buddha is sometimes called they who are able to be patient. That's the Buddha. They who are able to be patient. Sometimes this life is referred to as the land of patience in the Lotus Sutra. This is called the land of patience. Right? But it's not in a trance. We have to be careful not to be put in a trance and just that kind of waiting. It's an active waiting. It's awake and alive. He says, mind, body, and spirit track together as a unit to move things. Just, it's a prelude to action. I like that. A friend of mine and I were talking about patience and didn't quite like patience as the translation to capture the breadth and depth of kshanti. And they liked acceptance, particularly as it relates to adversity. And it's also translated as forbearance, tolerance, and endurance. Endurance can be a little tricky because sometimes we can just endure, you know, patiently endure. Sometimes that's required, but sometimes it could just be because we don't want to speak up or something's happening and we just endure. So I don't think it's talking about that. And forbearance, when somebody is receiving the transmission, the first stage is of receiving the transmission in the kirigami, and when they start to copy, when we start to copy the transmission papers, the first given kirigami is forbearance. That's what Dogen transmitted as the most important thing for the successor to begin with, that we have to learn forbearance, patience. When I saw that, I was just like, wow, that's amazing. That's amazing, because the copying goes back to the time of Dogen. All these various interpretations, whatever you want to, acceptance, forbearance, tolerance, really directly point to our anger, to working with our anger, our resentments, our hatreds, our dislikes, whether we're manifesting in our lives as other people, as ourselves, as situations, maybe as beliefs we find hard to accept or tolerate. How do we meet frustrations and difficulties? How do we work with injury and insult? Isn't that where we find patience so quickly, when we're injured or insulted? I don't know about you, but I'm like a flame. Sometimes I would notice. The insulted, flame goes up. No patience for that. When one side is dark, when one side is illuminated, the other side is dark. So it involves, in some degree, our capacity to, if you want to call it, forgive, pardon, understand the karma of these injuries and insults, real or imagined, in our everyday life. Avalokiteshvara, the bodhisattva of compassion, constantly appearing before us in a thousand different faces, thousand different guises, and challenging us to perfect this paramita of patience. How do we practice when our least favorite person steps into view, right there in front of us? Can we step back and welcome them as Avalokiteshvara? Whoa. Our least favorite person is the bodhisattva of compassion, developing us. They call Mara, a great bodhisattva, Mara, the tempter, the aspect of our mind that tempts us to turn away from ourself, as a great developer of our patience and our loving kindness. Avalokiteshvara, can we step back and welcome them as Avalokiteshvara, who, out of great compassion, unknowingly, of course, with that person, is providing us with yet another opportunity to be patient. Somebody at work, a parent, child. There's a story about a merchant named Funda, who one day encountered the Buddha and his disciples. And when he heard the Buddha teach, he was so impressed that he just immediately became a follower. Funda was brilliant, wonderful person, who eventually attained arhatship, means accomplished their own individual realization of practice. One day, the Buddha instructed Funda to go to the people to expound the teachings, and he was assigned to Brooklyn, State Street in Brooklyn. And he said to them, "Those people who are living on State Street are rough, mean people. If you if they insult you, what are you going to do? And Funda told Buddha, I will consider them to be good people because they don't hit or kick me. And Buddha said, if they hit or kick you, how are you going to react? And Funda said, I will still think they're good people because they don't beat me with a stick or throw stones. And Buddha went on, and well, if they throw stones and they beat you with a stick, what will you do? Funda says, I'll think they're good people because they don't injure me with a dagger or a knife. And Funda and the Buddha said, if they do that, how will you react? And Funda said, I will still think they're good people because they did not kill me. And Buddha finally asked, if they're going to kill you, what will you do? And Funda replied, I will still appreciate them. Among your disciples are many who are willing to die, willing to end their lives because life is so painful. If they're going to take my life, I will be glad to let them. And Buddha said, if you have that much patience, your mission will be successful. And indeed, according to this story, soon afterwards, Funda had some 500 followers. How about us? Just a small insult, intentional or unintentional, can give rise to such big upsets. And we might carry it around for a very long time, using our precious energy, holding on, fueling the fire, keeping it going. So, in practice, I think that where that's coming from turns around sooner and sooner, that we almost can't hold on so long. We just can't do it. We may not know what to do. So these words, patience, forbearance, and tolerance, may seem passive to us, but practicing patience is not at all a passive practice. It gives us a chance to actually actively engage in dealing with our frustrations and anger. Not only does Avalokiteshvara appear before us, but we are nothing but that bodhisattva, is what we discover. So how does this bodhisattva train? They come for Zazenkai. They sit down at home. They work with the person and people in front of them, in the subway, in the marketplace. The story of Funda reminds me of my teachers, Daido Roshi and Shugen Roshi. When I reflect on all the insults and injuries that they had to endure during their Daido, his 35, 40 years that he had on Mount Tremper, spreading the Dharma, his incredible patience. He's even gotten taken for his patience. He got fooled. He gave money away to a scam once. That's how patient he was. Just the broad vision they have. Like, I was like, what is this vision? Because I always felt so impatient. And you may sense that too. Still, there's sometimes still residues of that. But I practice it, right? People used to think I was mad all the time because I had to train people on ringing bells and all that we do here. And sometimes I would get impatient, and it wasn't, maybe it was angry, but it was just impatience and probably anger hidden in that. But I would get reported to the teacher, Hojin's so angry. I'm just trying to ring the bell. But, I was like, all right, get it already, And I was like, everyone has their own pace. I just have to be patient and find the way that somebody could actually learn how to do this, right? We don't all learn the same way. So we have to be patient to see how to work with who's in front of us. And then that wondrous capacity, that wonder confirmed happens, and it's so bright when you find that way together and you're not resisting. Yeah. So, what if we are in impossible situations and we make no excuses? We don't defend, but we simply acknowledge and accept the consequences of if we did something, or if we made a mistake, or if we became impatient. What if we remembered that those who cause us pain are enduring the effect of certain causes and are in pain themselves? That's hard, because we get defensive, we get insulted, and we can't see that the very place it's coming from is feeling the same way. What if we remembered to reflect on our own actions and the sticky situations created by those acts, no matter how innocent we might feel in the moment? When we encounter painful situations, we might just step back and ask some basic questions about our practice. Have this compassionate inquiry. One of my favorites is, what do I believe right now? I've said this to many of you, and is it true? What am I believing right now, and is it absolutely true? Because I've believed so many things about a situation, and then when I really look at it, I'm like, that's just not true. Like, I'm saying it because I'm defending or I'm protecting. But when I really look at it, it's a hard look to say, like, what I'm saying about this, it's not all true. I have a part in it too. Or what I'm saying is not completely true. What is there being manifested that I find so difficult to deal with? I can learn from that. What is being coming up that I find such a reaction to? I always say, that's the gold. Our reactions, it sucks. Like, who wants to be reactive? But if we can bear with it, stay patient with it, we can really find out what is so difficult to deal with. We have to remember to raise such questions. We have to remember to turn to practice in those times. Sometimes we forget we have a practice. It takes over. And I've learned to keep it light and keep my answers short. Not too heavy. But what's so difficult? And after all, why use the Dharma to beat up on ourselves and make ourselves feel bad, create more suffering, or do this to someone else, do it to others? Nor, of course, should we use it to make ourselves proud. Just simply to look at our experience, that is to study the Buddha way, is to study the self. There it is. Simple as that, to study the self. Dogen says, firewood becomes ash and it does not become firewood again. Yet do not suppose that ash is after and firewood is before. It's hard to let go of before and after what had happened and what's going to happen. There's the duality. There's the holding of before and after, not clinging to what passed or grasping for what's next, because we don't really know. We're only right here. And can we open to right here? That's the patience of impermanence. Things complete themselves in their own time. If we're dragging the past, then we have the past we're bringing. We know it's there. I mean, if your wounds, you don't forget. You've got a scar. You don't forget, but you don't live there. or you can't move forward. We can't move forward till we're here and see what's next. To meet past and future without resistance. The fire that's burning is not lost. It's just suchness. It's just that very moment. That very momentness. So patience is not just enduring change, but trusting transformation itself. Trusting the alchemy of that itself. Because it's impermanent. It's not fixed. It has no inherent self nature. There will be transformation if we can hold it, not leap. And sometimes we do, and then you realize that, oh, there I go, I'm like attached to this or looking for the result, and you just have to stop, just stop. Each form fulfilling its dharma in its own moment. That's what we're patient to, the listening of that, the non-interference. And there's practices you can do. Atonement that we'll do on Sunday. Gatha of Atonement, being at one with our actions, seen or unseen, or since beginningless beginning. Forgiveness. I was talking about that with someone, and I remember a time where, like, I didn't even want to hear that word. And people were saying, well, eventually you're forgive. And I was like, don't even say that. Don't even say the word. And then I found this book by this woman. I was going to invite her to the monastery because I thought her book was great. It started off with, I just want to say, you don't have to forgive anyone. And I was like, okay, I can read this. That's a good starting point. Yeah, that's an interesting practice. And when it comes in, but it can be used as a meditation to complement it, contemplate possibility, being open to possibility, because we are in this boat together. We are crossing the shore together, always together. No one goes alone. But it's a solo journey in many ways. We know this. That's why we have our zabatons are separate. They're not connected. We're not on one strip, right? So we do have our own little island, but we're together. So we have to have courage and just bravery to continue step by step by step. You know, Dogen's emphasis in this fascicle is no gaining, but yet making effort. What kind of effort do we make without this expectation? So you might think, oh, I'm coming to Zazenkai. I'm going to sit really hard. And like, Zazenkai is weird, just have to say. Like, we do a session, which is a whole week of sitting. And this is like one day. It's all in one day, right? We come in and just, whoo. Anyway, just had to say that. Yes, this training in our forbearance and our patience in this day. And we get discouraged at times. That's why we do need each other. Wish we can cross over sooner. But Dogen's saying it's already here. It's already, the whole of it is already here. One side's illuminated, the other side's dark, but it's all here. As one reality. We don't have control over it, but we are humbled by the relentlessness of honesty, of living, and opening our hearts. This is the practice of the great compassionate Bodhisattva Avalokiteshvara. And it's not someone else's practice. It's yours, it's mine. Simply our own direct experience of our own lives. right, in this land of patience. Dogen says, practice is realization. Just practice is realization. Whenever we practice something, right, practice it, that's a realized thought. It's not a path toward enlightenment, he says, but enlightenment expressing itself now as we practice. We're putting, so what is in light? We're coming out of ignorance. Because Dogen speaks about delusion within delusion. We have to, it's hard to say, like, I'm deluded. I'm a deluded person. I'm not a Buddha. I know Buddhahood, but I'm working through delusions. So I can be deluded and know I'm deluded within delusion. Our zazen, our daily activity, even our struggles are already the awakened life. We always think, when I don't do that anymore, who hasn't, when this is over, then I'll be able to. And he's like, no, that's all the whole of it. It's the whole of it. Don't respect it. Don't discard it. Don't think it shouldn't be there. It's there for a reason. When one side is illuminated, the other side is dark. Practice in the Genjo Koan is the willingness to keep sitting, to keep showing up, even when the moon is obscured by clouds, as he says, trusting that it never moved. The moon is the awakened mind. Even though there's clouds, obscurations, it's never moved. It's shining bright. It's the patience of the moonlight itself. Never in a hurry. Shining on every one of us equally. Equally.
Thank you for listening. To find out more about the Zen Center of New York City's programs, retreats, and residency, or to make a donation, please visit our website, zcnyc.org.